Welcome back to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler, and I'm so happy that you've joined us. As the creator and host of this podcast, it is critical to me to convey to you, our listeners, how much positive power you have inside of you right now, in this very moment. You have the power to change your life. And that could be changing it, like I had to back when I was 23, from a place of kind of being on a road to nowhere, kind of feeling hopeless and stuck, to being on a road to somewhere desirable, someplace good. It could also be changing your life from good to great. And it could also be changing your life from great to, I cannot believe how incredibly blessed and lucky I am to get to live this life. You have that power inside of you, and that is all you need to get started. The rest, you can learn along the way. I started this podcast as a way to bring stories of hope and triumph, as well as resources that will help you along that journey, whatever that might be, whatever your starting place is, or whatever your destination might be. My sincerest hope is that you find it valuable. So let's go. Here is this week's episode. You guys are ready for a terrific episode because I loved this interview. My guest today is a speaker, teacher, writer, and researcher. He helps you understand the process for creating true success in your life by understanding how to use your brain the right way, overcoming your problems, achieving your goals, and ending frustrations. He is the host of the podcast Using Your Brain for Success and the creator of Neurostate Rebalancing, NSR, a process which automatically gets the four parts of your brain working the right way to bring you the life you want. His name is Liam Naden, and I cannot wait for you to meet him. Liam, thank you so much for joining me here on the podcast.
Hi, Bobby. Thank you very much for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, this is great. Now, and you told me when we were talking before we hit record that you are in France right now.
Yeah, that's right. Enjoying the heat wave.
Yeah. I think the heat wave's been everywhere, right?
Yeah. Oh, it's good.
Yeah.
Lovely country.
Nice. So I kind of thought we'd get started with a little bit about your story. I found it very compelling, you know. So do you want to go ahead and share a little bit about that?
Sure. Okay. Well, I guess I've always been one of those people, probably like you or certainly many of your listeners as well, where pretty well all of my life that I can remember, I've been consumed by this idea of how can I be the best that I can be?
Yeah.
How can I really go for it, as they say in life? How can I take control and find happiness and freedom and all of those great things and live a great life? And, you know, I tried lots and lots of different things. I was brought up in a religious family, so naturally I tried religion first. And I was told, well, really, the way to be successful is ask God for what you want, pray, and you'll get what you want. And it didn't quite work for me. And I noticed it didn't really quite work for most people or anybody really that I had around me. So I thought, well, maybe there's a different approach, or I'm not getting it, or something not quite right about this. So I went really down the whole gamut of studying things like in the personal development field, mm-hmm. all sorts of different techniques and strategies. I went to seminars all over the world. I read all sorts of books. I did courses. You know, I was the one who had the library full of, in those days, tapes, but recordings of, yeah. you know, subliminal hypnotic suggestions and ways to change your thinking and reprogram your subconscious mind. And I went to all the goal setting workshops, and I had all the books on goal setting and motivation. And really, I was on this mission to find out, what's the secret? Is there a secret here? Is there a method or a process or something that has the answer? Because, of course, many of the people, probably all of the people who I was going to the seminar with or who wrote the book were promising the answer, or were at least giving me an idea that this would be something that could really help. So I really tried all of those things. And at the same time as I was studying success, I was also experiencing success, if you like. I was an entrepreneur, which I still am, but I've had 18 different businesses throughout my life. And many of them successful, some of them not successful. But So I did have a lot of success financially. Basically, from university, I went into my own business. I've never really worked for anybody else or been in a company. So I had my own success, if you like, and I was making plenty of money and I was starting to amass possessions and houses and all sorts of things. But one thing I noticed was that no matter how much outward success I had and how much I studied success, and I also did a lot of spiritual techniques as well, but no matter what I studied, I still had lots of stress. I had lots of problems in my life. And of course, I was starting to therefore buy into the idea that I'm sure I'd read in many books, which is life is a struggle. If you want to be successful, you have to struggle. You have to overcome adversity. You have to beat the odds. You have to work incredibly hard and struggle and overcome challenges. And problems and stress, well, that's just a natural part of success. You just have to accept that. So I was getting to the point where I did accept it. But something really interesting happened in my mid-40s, which was, despite all this outward success and all everything I knew about how to create success, and I had all my goals written down and I was, you know, working hard towards them and working on my beliefs and working on my thoughts and all of those things. But in my mid-40s, something happened which meant that I went from being a multimillionaire to literally losing everything and becoming homeless.
Wow.
And I had to move back in with my elderly mother and sleep on the sofa in the living room in her small apartment.
Wow.
And this was like a real shock to me because I thought, I remember being on the sofa, wasn't very comfortable.
Yeah. But I remember thinking,
and I remember thinking, how could this have happened to me? Because I know how to be successful. I know how to set the goals and how to achieve goals and do the right things and, you know, think the right thoughts. And yet I feel completely out of control of my life. And so this was really strange. And I didn't know what was going on. And worse than not knowing why it had happened to me was the feeling I didn't know what to do to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I had no clue. I had no friends. No, it was my mother.
Yeah.
She was back in a town where I hadn't been for many years. I didn't know anybody. All my businesses and income and assets, they were all gone. And I really had no clue on how to get myself out of the situation. But I did eventually. Obviously, one gets through these things.
That's right.
And I started to rebuild my life. And what I noticed was things were working out quite differently to the way they'd been before. Because I was starting to set up new businesses and do different things and earn some really good money again with my own businesses. And I was starting to have some freedom to do the things I wanted to do again. But one thing I noticed was that instead of me chasing after success and really pushing and struggling and trying to achieve success, it was almost like success was coming to me because people were showing up in my life quite unexpectedly who had opportunities that I could take advantage of. I was coming up with ideas that I'd never thought of. I thought, wow, that's where that idea come from. That's a really good idea. I'll do that. And best of all, these things work.
Yeah.
You know, it was almost like there was a flow, a progression of the right action, the right results, the right people, the right things happening to really give me a great life. And one of the most amazing things of all, to me, the most puzzling thing was I thought when this was all going on, hang on a second here, what's really interesting is I don't have any problems or stress. Things
right.
are happening a lot more easily. You know, what's this all about? And of course, I was working hard and doing what needed to be done, but I wasn't going to bed at night worried and unable to sleep with all the problems I had to deal with. And I wasn't waking up in the morning worried about dreading opening my email inbox to see what problems had shown up overnight. I was going to bed grateful and excited and waking up grateful and excited and really enjoying my life. So it was quite a change. And I thought, I really need to figure this out because all of the things that I've been learning and studying and all this information and knowledge that I've gathered that wasn't really that helpful for me in the end, what am I doing differently? What's the missing link? What's the piece of the puzzle? Because I'm obviously doing something different. It's not a fluke that this is all happening. So I thought, I want to figure out what I'm doing because I don't want to stop doing it. I want to make sure I keep doing this so I keep getting the same result. And that really is what has led me on to going on. Really, I went on a sort of a research detective hunt to try and figure out the difference. And that's really the base of my work now, which is all to do with the brain.
Yeah. So Liam, what I'm hearing there is like when everything was really going well, you know, like your businesses were going well, you know, there was that and you were feeling the stress and feeling the struggle. And yet when you were homeless, you know, when that happened, the stress wasn't as present for you.
Well, it was a lot of, when you're homeless and you've got nothing and you've got people ringing you up, it is very stressful. But there was a shift that happened in what I was doing. It was in the way I was using my brain. Mm-hmm. And it really came down to what I discovered is quite a biological thing.
Yeah.
Because I think what we've all forgotten about, and I remember this is one of the things I started to do when life got a lot better, is I started to spend a bit more time in nature than I'd ever had before.
Yeah.
And in fact, that's what I do most of the time. My lifestyle is very much in nature. I live on a boat. I have done for several years. And before that, I traveled around in a motorhome. So I spent a lot of time in nature. And I started to look at nature, and I thought, there's something really interesting here that I've overlooked, that I've missed. And that is, when I look at nature, everything seems to work perfectly. Now, if you mm-hmm. actually go out and look at a bird or a tree or an insect, there is no struggle or stress. It's just everything seems to work perfectly. You know, if a bird wants some food, it gets some food. It's not struggling
it's not stressed out about it.
Not stressed out about it, and it doesn't have a goals list either.
No.
But anyway.
No.
So I thought, well, this is interesting. This is an area I haven't really thought about, but it makes total sense to think about who are we biologically? Because we live in a biological world that seems to be very, very successful. And in fact, the more I looked into it, I realized that people who'd researched this, one of the things they found was that nature is 98% successful.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a 2% failure rate in nature, which means that, you know, if a tree is planted in the wrong place, it might fall over, or if a storm comes, it might wash things away or whatever. But basically, nature is wired and designed for success. Most of it is doing really well without problems in its natural environment. And of course, if you ask a biological scientist, well, therefore, what is the purpose of life then? And how does life work on a biological level? They'd say there's only one purpose of life, actually, and that is to survive. Mm. All life is wired and designed to achieve or to aim for survival. So that, of course, so that it can reproduce and allow for the continuation of the species. So, but when you really think about what that means is that if for the greatest chance of survival for any living thing, what gives us its greatest chance of survival? It's being at its best.
Yeah.
So, and that means when it's its strongest, its healthiest, it has the greatest chance of survival. So that means nature is literally wired to ensure that every living thing is the best that it can be.
That's cool.
This is how nature works. Now, humans, we're no different because we're also natural. We're also biological. So we're wired to be the best that we can be as well. But being the best that we can be as humans doesn't mean just physically in terms of our strength. It also means mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. In other words, it means feeling good, feeling happy, not having problems. Because what are problems? Problems are a sign that you're not being your best. So they can't have, we could talk about this shortly, if you like, about what problems, the way I've perceived or the way I've worked it out, what they actually are. But they're not part of nature's design for us or for anything, for there to be problems, because they don't allow us to be the best that we can be, to give us the greatest chance of survival, to live our biological purpose, which is literally to survive to the best of our ability.
That's fascinating. I love that.
Yeah, it was a bit of a breakthrough in my thinking, really. And then I thought, the logical next question is to say, okay, well, what has nature provided in the way of a mechanism or a system or a machine or some apparatus to ensure that every living thing lives out its biological purpose, that every living thing is striving to be the best that it can be? In other words, have the greatest chance for survival.
Yeah.
And every living thing has a mechanism or a machine or whatever you want to call it, whose sole task is to ensure or to strive to ensure that that creature, that organism, is the best that it can be, so it has the greatest chance of survival. And that is a brain.
Mm-hmm.
Every organism, there's a couple of exceptions, but literally every organism has a brain that its sole purpose is to ensure that you stay alive, that it stays alive, and for the longest time possible, which means being the best that it can be, but which gives it the greatest chance. So we're like nature as well. We're biologically, we've got this machine, and in us, it really is a machine because it's so complex and so powerful. It's literally the most powerful machine on the planet. Many, many scientists have acknowledged that.
That's right.
But its sole purpose is to make us the best that we can be so that we have the greatest chance of survival along with every other living thing. And that means us being happy, being fulfilled, not having problems in our life. So the same people who said nature has a 98% success rate have also said that humans, there's one exception, humans have a 98% failure rate. And that is, in other words,
wow,
98% of people aren't being the best they can be, are they? And you can see that. People aren't happy. They aren't feeling like they're living their best, they're in control of their life, they're really contributing.
And,
exactly. So why is there such a difference? And there can only be one, which is somehow in some way this machine is not operating properly.
Yeah.
Our brain is not operating the way every other brain in nature operates. Somehow the machine is being used the wrong way. And that's what I discovered. And I thought of that there's an analogy with other machines. If you think about a motor car, for instance, that's a machine. We all know what it is. We know what it's designed to do, which is to get you from where you are to where you want to go. It's a machine. That's its job. And it will do it efficiently, effectively, without any problem, without any stress, reliably, predictably. It'll do it if it's used the right way.
Yeah.
Because if you use it the wrong, if you get into a car and you don't know how to drive it, and you keep the handbrake on, or you whatever you do, if you don't use it the right way, it's not going to do that. In fact, it's going to create problems. If you put the wrong fuel into it, you're going to have problems, and the problems only show up because it's being used the wrong way. And I thought this is really interesting because we've never been taught that our brain, what it actually is, that it's this machine designed to ensure that we're the best that we can be biologically, to give us the greatest chance of survival. We've never even been taught that or told that. And we've certainly never been told how to use it the right way. And that's why we have problems. Because if, for instance, say you're an African tribesman and you've never seen a car before, and you come out of the forest and someone says, well, that's a car, it'll take you anywhere you want to go. You go, I wonder what I need to do. Ah, I see it's got wheels. I'll get behind it and I'll push. And I'll put as much effort in as I can, and I'll push it to where it wants to go. Well, of course, nothing's going to happen if the brakes are on, which they probably are.
Right.
And if anything does happen, it's going to be an awful lot of strain, struggle, and stress, and not be very efficient or effective. But what would that tribesman say? He'd probably say, "I'm not putting in enough effort. I'm not strong enough. I need to double my efforts. I need to be more determined, more motivated." I might even pray to my God, get me to where I want to go, get me to this place.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter what you do, any of those things, it's just not going to work. You need to know.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, anybody looking at that man would say, what are you doing? You can't possibly expect to get a good result if you don't know how to drive it, if no one's shown you how to do it.
That's right.
We wouldn't dream of getting into a car without learning how to drive it, but we've got the most powerful machine in the world. Why do we think we can just get anywhere we want without knowing anything about it, knowing how to use it?
Yeah, and really we've never been taught it.
Well, the funny thing is, we've been taught it by all religion, all philosophy. When I say all, I say pretty much the ones that I've seen. But how we've interpreted it is in the wrong way, because we complicate things and we keep coming up with all these different things, and not only that, we're given all these ideas from other people who don't necessarily want us to know how to use our brain the right way, because it's so empowering to us individually. Or maybe they don't know as well. But even the Bible, and we could talk about the Bible a bit later when I mention my model of how the brain actually works, you'll see very clearly the Bible says exactly how to use it. The Bible is a fantastic user's manual for the brain. But it's just we've never seen it like that, because we don't have the perspective, if you like. We've never been given the perspective to look at it in that particular way, but it's all there.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about how should we use the brain? I think that's a great segue.
Well, the first thing to realize is to understand how the brain works and to realize it's not a quick fix because, mm-hmm. you know, if your 10-year-old son or I'm not saying you've got it, I don't know if you have a 10-year-old son, but I'm just, you know, if one had a 10-year-old son came along, oh, Dad, can I use the car tomorrow night to go to a party? And you'd say, well, Dad or Mum, you'd say, you don't know how to drive it. What are you talking about? You can't just get in and get to a party 100 miles away tomorrow. And they might say to you, oh, look, you know, but I'll be really careful. And they say, no, but you have to learn how to drive it. And then they say, well, just give me a couple of quick tips on how to use
That's
it.
That's right.
And then I'll learn later maybe, but just give me some quick tips just to get me to the party tomorrow night, 100 miles away. And their parents are going to say, look, it just doesn't work that way. You have to understand how the car works. You have to understand what all the bits do. You don't need to know all the technical names, but you do need to know what you need to do to get that in the right sequence to get it working. And that takes a bit of, firstly, it takes understanding. You have to understand what the bits are and how they work, not to any great technical degree, but you do need to know, as I say, what a little bit about it. And then you need to practice. But the great thing is when you understand, and that's what I'm leading on to, maybe talking about my model for how the brain works, because when you understand, then a lot of the confusion goes away on how to actually use it, because you think, oh, it's so logical now. Why have I never done it this way? Mm-hmm. This is the only way I could possibly make it work. And that's a real motivator and puts you on a focus of what you need to do to use it the right way, because what you need to do to use it the right way is actually quite simple, but it takes a bit of understanding.
Right. Okay. And it sounds like it takes a little bit of work. It's not, quick tips. Yeah.
As I say, I've created a model for the brain, and maybe I could share what that is, because that explains really in quite simple terms how the brain works. So again, this isn't technical. Like with the car, I'm not saying get in and put the, you know, overdrive thruster button into negative gear or whatever. I mean, you don't need to know any of that. So the model for the brain that I've researched is all based on science. It's all based on physiology. This is actual physical stuff, but I'm not using the technical terms. I'm using the terms that are useful to us to understand. Okay, so there are essentially four parts to the brain. And as I say, these are all physical parts. These aren't just ideas. This is physical places that have a separate function. And the first part of the brain is what I call the thinking brain. And the thinking brain, which is actually located on the top of your head, what this does is this takes all of the information that's coming to you from your environment in every second of your life, and it's storing it in essentially a big library or database. So everything you get from your senses, what you hear, smell, taste, touch, and see, your ideas, your thoughts, or other ideas and thoughts, whatever comes in, your thinking brain gathers this and assimilates it and stores it in this part of your brain. As I say, it's like a big library. The second part of your brain is your emotional brain, your feeling brain. And this is actually located just below the thinking brain inside our heads. But obviously, what this does, this is responsible for managing how you feel, your emotions, which can range from feeling great, which is really what we're supposed to be, to the opposite, which is fear, stress, all those things. But this is all managed and controlled by your emotional feeling brain. The third part of your brain is what I call the survival brain. And this really manages everything to do with keeping you alive on a moment-by-moment basis. It's actually located mainly at the back of the head, this part of the brain. So all of the automatic functions of your body, your organs, the physical processes, your breathing, heart rate, all those things, this is all managed by your survival brain. It's keeping you alive. It's keeping you surviving. And there's one other really important. So in addition to all of that, managing you on a moment-by-moment basis to keep all of your organs and things working well, and in fact, there's a state that biology calls homeostasis, which means the optimum functioning of the organism. Your survival brain is managing that to make sure all of your digestion, all of your processes, in other words, you're being the best that you can be physically, to give you the greatest chance of survival. But there's one other important aspect of your survival that is managed by the survival brain, and that is, if you can think back to, again, the man from the tribe who's walking along the forest, and a lion rushes out at him from behind a tree and roars. And what happens then? He is faced with an immediate danger, an immediate threat to his survival. So the survival brain has a process for dealing with that, because most of the time you're supposed to be feeling good, but occasionally a lion might run at you from out of the jungle, from behind the tree. So what the survival brain does then is it activates something called the sympathetic nervous system, which kicks in this thing which we sometimes call fight, flight, freeze, or, you know, danger response mechanism. And it diverts all of the energy of your brain and your body to one single thing, and that is to eliminate that threat or that danger, to get rid of it. So that could mean running away or shouting for help or, you know, standing and fighting, whatever it is. But we've all had that experience where we feel this fear, which is a sign that you're activating your sympathetic nervous system, and it's a sign that your brain is recognizing an immediate danger, and you just automatically do things. You know, if someone raises their fist at you, you just automatically put your hand up. You're not thinking about it. In fact, you don't want to be thinking about it. This is an automatic response. So all this is managed by your survival brain. And that, of course, is a really important part of our survival, because there are, maybe not these days so much, but there are going to be the odd danger and threat to our survival. And there certainly were a lot of them if you go back to, you know, the caveman day. So it's a survival instinct, if you like. Now, the fourth part of the brain, and science has only more recently really started to identify that this is actually a separate part of the brain, but it's what I call the creative brain. Mm. And the creative brain is actually the part of your brain that's supposed to be in charge of your life, because this is the part of your brain that ensures that you are the best that you can be, that you have the greatest chance of your survival. So your creative brain is responsible for the things like your creativity, as the name suggests, your imagination, your resourcefulness. It's also your motivation. Yeah. It's where you feel really motivated to do things, do the right things. It gives you those aha moments and those little feelings about what the right decision about something is. Should I talk to that person? No, it doesn't feel right. Should I do that business deal? No, it doesn't feel right. Or it does feel right. Yeah. Should I marry that person? Yes. Or whatever it is. This is all managed by the creative brain. But here's the other interesting thing about the creative brain, because remember, I didn't mention it before, but the brain is just unbelievably powerful. It has the computer power of 500 trillion computer microprocessors, they've estimated. It's unbelievable. So it not only has the ability to manage your internal environment, it actually has the ability to manage your external environment. And from a low state of awareness, we might call these things chance, luck, coincidence, synchronicity. But in a very real sense, and this is what I was experiencing as well, and I still do actually, that these unexpected things that come along. And I think if your listeners really think about it, most of the things that shape your life in a dramatic way are things that you haven't thought about that sort of come out of left field. Yeah. You meet that person and marry them that you're never expecting to meet, or you get that business opportunity or whatever it is. But all of this is, so things that we would call coincidence are not really. These are part of managing our environment that our creative brain does. So the whole purpose of the way you're supposed to live, using your brain the right way, is to so that it does its job of ensuring that you can be the best that you can be, including your happiness, including not having problems, is you allow this creative brain to be in charge. And coincidentally, this is when you feel good as well, because the chemicals that are produced by your emotional brain when you're in your creative state make you feel good. This is when you feel loving, creative, imaginative, joyful, grateful, all of those things. This is our natural state. This is when we're the best that we can be. This is when we're contributing the most to the world and to ourselves. We're in the flow. We're in the zone. It's often called.
Right. You know,
they talk about composers, people who write music or art. They say, well, I heard the music and then I just wrote it down, but I don't know where it came from. It just came to me. Or what I wrote just came to, or the painting, I could just see it and it just showed up on the canvas. So this is how we're supposed to live. But there's only one time you're not supposed to be living like this, which is feeling great and everything's well, your body and is functioning as the best that it can be. Your brain is doing all these things for you. There's only one time you're not supposed to feel like that. And that's when the lion comes running out at you from the jungle, because there's an immediate threat to your survival. So what the brain actually does, and it starts in the emotional brain actually, is it recognizes a danger and it sends a signal in the form of a feeling, which is fear, which can also be stress, worry, anxiety, which says there's an immediate threat, there's an immediate danger. Creative brain, get out of the way. Survival brain, kick in. You've got to deal with this danger. So all of the resources from your creative brain and, in fact, from the rest of your body that aren't useful in dealing with an immediate threat or danger, they're drawn away into this function so that you have the greatest ability, maybe the greatest strength to run away or to fight, or the best ability to shout the loudest or whatever to deal with that problem. But here's the thing. What's supposed to happen when you're using your brain the right way is your brain recognizes that that's an immediate threat, kicks in your sympathetic nervous system so you feel fear and you get rid of the threat. And as soon as it's gone, your creative brain comes back and starts running the whole thing all over again, and you're back at being the best that you can be. Because one of the things that happens, you might have already picked it up, is that when you're in this state of fear, stress, and worry, your creative brain is shut down.
That's right.
And guess where all of your problem-solving ability, all of your ability to see the right things to do, the right people to meet, the right situations, the things to avoid, guess where all that is? That's
creative.
That creative part of your brain. And
yeah.
You don't have access to any of that when you're feeling fear, stress, and worry.
Yeah.
You shut it down.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? And the problem, of course, most people are spending the 98% of the failures. Sorry, that sounds a bit judgmental, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
They're spending all their time in a state of fear, stress, and anxiety. And what they don't realize is their brain is actually telling them there's something in their environment that's an immediate threat to their survival when there isn't.
That's
right. Something they're watching on the television, or a conversation they're having, or somebody's told them something. It's not a threat to their survival, but their brain thinks it is. So it activates this reactive state where you get into arguments, you do the wrong thing, you push, you struggle, you react all the time. And meanwhile, the resources that you have that can truly get rid of all that stuff and truly give you the life you're supposed to live, you don't have access to that.
No.
And this is why the Bible, why I said earlier, it's the greatest success manual for the brain. It says more than 360 times in the Bible, be not afraid, have no fear, have faith, believe.
That's right.
Now, it's not saying it's a good idea not to be so fearful. Try not to be so afraid. Don't worry so much about everything. It's not saying that. It's saying do not be afraid, because the minute you feel fear, you're finished, unless you're dealing with an immediate threat to your survival. That's what it's there for. It's not there to deal with your problems. Can't.
No.
All it can do is create problems, actually, because it makes you do the wrong thing.
Yeah.
You react. You get in an argument with somebody and you shout back at them and you say terrible things and you think later, oh, I shouldn't have said that. It only made it worse. But that's your survival brain just reacting. It can only make things worse. So, this is, and it's really, when you understand that, I think the first thing that came to my mind is I've got to realize that fear is the enemy. Anything that's making me feel bad, it's activating the state, which is blocking my resources to allow my brain to give me the best life possible.
Yeah.
And that was really the difference between before and after my two lives, if you like, was that I found a way, and I've subsequently discovered what I actually did to stop being afraid of all the things that weren't an immediate threat to my survival and allow my creative brain to actually do its job and say, here you go, Liam, thank goodness you're out of the way. Now let's get on and give you the best life possible. That's what I'm here to give you. Thank you.
Yeah. See, that's amazing. And I think part of my grad degree, I had to study a little bit of neuroscience, and I also do mental fitness coaching. So what you're saying here, Liam, we call it different things. Like in the mental fitness, the positive intelligence program, it's called the Sage Brain, but it's that same thing. That's where our creativity, the problem solving, all that stuff lies, but we're not giving ourselves the access to it. And I think a couple of things happen, right? I mean, I think that we always think there's the lion jumping out, right?
Yeah,
and
of course. That's the problem.
It's rare that we're actually encountering a lion, but we think everything's a lion. Yeah. And then I think the other part of it is too, I've heard this, that our brains just don't, we don't get ourselves out of that survival brain. It takes too long. We just stay in that state when something does trigger it.
I think what we don't realize is the effect that negative stuff has on us.
Yeah.
Because people say things like, oh, you've got to stay informed. And sort of, well, for you, Liam, you don't have problems. I've got to live in the real world. Okay, I've been homeless. I know I've had a lot of problems before then. So what we do is we don't realize, it's a bit like if someone came along and gave you a glass of hydrochloric acid and said, drink this, you'd say, well, hang on, what planet are you from? If I drink that, it's going to harm me. And they say, no, well, I'll give you $10 million. And if you really believe and you pray and you have faith and you're really motivated and you say all these things to yourself, it will not harm me. And if everyone else is drinking the stuff, or they look like they're going to drink the stuff as well, you'd still say, I'm sorry, you don't get it. I know what it's going to do to me. It doesn't matter what the justification for drinking the hydrochloric acid, it's going to damage me, if not kill me. And it's the same with fear. When you realize how your brain works, you start to really get ruthless, if you like, about what you're going to allow into your life to make you feel bad, because you can't live being the best that you can be, that you're designed to, when you allow fear into your life. That's not an immediate threat to your survival. It's just not the way the brain's designed to work.
Yeah.
And sometimes that requires, and I teach this and I'm sure you do as well, you've got to really start looking at your environment and say, what am I allowing in that's making me feel bad? Is it that employee that's wrong for the job? I need to get rid of them. Is it that part of my business that's wrong? I need to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. Is it that relationship that's wrong? Well, maybe I need to do, if I can't get rid of it, I need to minimize it, you know, if it's my mother or somebody, maybe I get to see them once every now and then and don't stay as long or something.
Yeah.
And we also have absolutely the choice on what we put into our bodies, both physically and mentally, from television, the media, whatever. We don't have to have all this negativity. And when we realize, because what's the opposite of fear? It's not actually faith, it's understanding. Mm. Because when we understand the power of our brain and what it's designed to do, then we can allow it to do its job. It's a bit like a car. You don't get into a car and you go, I need to get out every 5 seconds to make sure it's still working and check on the wheels and check the engines. Get in and you enjoy the ride. You think, why would I bother checking? That's what it's doing, its job. Great.
Right.
I don't have to worry about it. So that's where understanding it is so critical. And the more you understand, the more you start thinking, that's really the first of two things you have to do. But the one of the main things that you can do, if people want a quick fix, and remember, the quick fix is a function of your survival brain. Give me an answer now. Give me a quick fix. I need to get out of my pain now. Life doesn't work like that, even though we're absolutely inundated with people who tell us that it will. Do this, buy this product, go on this holiday, buy this house, marry this person.
That's right.
And all your problems will be solved. It's just not how it works. But when we realize that, it's not a quick fix, but it's about saying, I'm going to really start managing my environment so that I can feel good the rest of the time. And the beauty is, once you start doing this, you see miracles show up in your life and you go, wow, how did that happen? This is great.
Yeah.
And the more that happens, the more you understand and the more you quote unquote trust through understanding. And it's like a snowball effect. And then you get to the point of realizing this is the way everybody should live. And again, it says in the Bible, do not worry about what you shall eat, drink, or wear. You know, that'll all be provided for you. The lilies in the field are provided for. The birds in the air, they're provided for. Don't you think you'll be provided for?
That's
and when
right.
you realize it's your creative brain's job to ensure that you are provided for, then you can just get out of the way and let it do its job.
Yeah. I love the comparison to nature, Liam, because I love nature. That's why I live in Colorado and I'm splitting time down here in Arkansas, surrounded by nature, because it's, you know, that's, and I grew up on a farm. And I always, my dad's 89 and we talk twice a week. And I'm always talking to my dad about like how nature amazes me. Like, if you think about it, how does a baby deer survive? Right. I mean, there's all these predators and all this kind of stuff, but somehow nature provides. Or like we took our dogs to the lake the other day and my one little dog jumped in and just started swimming. I thought, how in the world does a dog learn how to swim? Right. No one teaches a dog how to swim, yet they know how. So I love that comparison to it. When we just trust, right, that part of our process. And sometimes you hear people talk about it in terms of abundance, you know, there's enough, there's plenty. And yet I think that there's something, the messaging we get, if you think about it, we get messages like, you know, no pain, no gain. You got to push harder. You know, you got to grind it out. I mean, oh my goodness. Here in the States, I don't know how it is over in Europe. We are inundated with those types of messages.
Yeah.
It's all about
our programming you to use your brain the wrong way with the wrong,
that's right,
wrong idea on how you work. It's like saying, you know, you have to push your car. And there's a virtue in struggle.
That's right.
So this is what we have to overcome. And I'm sure it's your mission. It certainly is mine too, to really get people to think about these things. Because one of the things that being in your survival state does is it shuts down your awareness of what is the truth.
That's right.
when the lion is running at you from behind the tree, you can't be looking at the flowers and the sky and everything else. You're focused on a danger. Where is the threat? Where is the danger? Your brain is single-mindedly focused on anything negative that and it's on the lookout only for negative things that it can find in your environment, because that's the danger. So what's the sound there? Is there a snake in the grass? What other dangers? That's what it's designed to do. You don't see the big picture, and you certainly don't see the big picture of who you actually are, because you're so right about nature. If we were to actually stop for a moment, and the beauty of living in your creative state, you just become so much more aware of this. You realize we live in an absolutely perfect world, a perfect natural environment. And there's an infinite intelligence that is controlling everything. It's what that makes the dog do what it does. It makes the fly, you know, even watch an ant or watch what ants do. How do they get that? They know what to do every second. Everything does. There's an infinite intelligence that is holding everything together. People think, oh, that sounds a bit kooky. But it's not. Once you start raising your awareness, you can see it. You can see the perfection of everything. And that also helps you start to put your life in perspective about who you really are and how powerful you really are.
Yeah,
and that you are a part of an infinite intelligence, something that's guiding everything from making the planets revolve around the sun and all of the stars work right down to atoms, you know.
That's right.
So it's absolutely unbelievable. And in fact, the more you see this, the more you think, wow, I can spend my life just looking at a leaf, on one leaf on one tree, and I'd still be astounded 50 years later just by looking at that. It is so incredible. But again, the problem is, it doesn't matter how much you want to do any of this, if you're in survival state, if your brain is shut down, it physically, biologically can't do this for you. Mm-hmm. It can't give you access to see any of these things.
We're literally cutting off those resources,
our biological connection to infinite intelligence. And it's good when you're faced with an immediate threat. As I say, you don't want to be connected to a greater awareness when all you've got to do is jump out of the way of the lion or deal with the threat. That's what it's there for. It's not designed to solve your problems.
No.
Because you're not supposed to have problems in your creative state.
Yeah.
And if you look again, you look at nature, doesn't have problems. It's 98% successful. So this is all biologically, you know, it's not something I came up with. It's some kooky theory. The evidence is all there.
It's all there. Yeah. It's just helping more people find that, you know. And what keeps coming up to mind is it really a lion? Like when you feel that, like, is this really a lion that you're facing? And it's usually not. So, Liam, this has been amazing. I love this. I mean, I think we could talk all day about this because I think we're in great alignment. But I want to give you a chance, like, what, for the listeners who want to learn more about you, the work that you do, what's the best way for them to learn about that?
Well, if they go to my website, which is just my name, liamnaden.com. I have my own podcast called Using Your Brain for Success, which really goes into more detail about how your brain works.
Nice.
And I've also got a course, and I've developed a process called Neurostate Rebalancing, which, as the name suggests, rebalances your brain. Because the second most important thing you can do after you've stopped letting all this negative fuel, after you're starting to put the right fuel in by stopping allowing the wrong fuel to come in the form of negativity, you have to allow your brain, you have to retrain it to a degree, to see the difference between what is, just what you said, what is a real threat and what isn't. Because we've got all this programming and stuff and ideas about all these things that's confused our brain to associate nearly everything with an immediate threat to our survival. So what neurostate rebalancing does, it's a process I've created that help you release the fears, many of which you don't even know you have, most of which you probably don't know you have, so that your brain can actually only activate this survival state when you are faced with an immediate danger. And the funny thing is, I think you mentioned it just before, we hardly ever are faced with a real threat to our survival. Mm-hmm. You know, but our biology was created millions of years ago when we lived in it, when there were lions around every rock.
Right.
So we needed a lot more then, but we hardly ever need it now, really.
Right.
And the great thing about that is you can spend more time in your natural creative states. So therefore you can achieve more, you can create more, be more resourceful, do greater things, because you're not needing to spend any time in survival. I mean, we live in the best time in history. If we can't enjoy our life with this, I mean, really, how much more do we need, without trying to sound judgmental, but it is actually true.
Yeah.
We live a better life than 99% of people who've ever lived.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good point. Because it is. Think about what our ancestors had to deal with even 100 years ago or 50 years ago. I mean, it is. And wow.
Well, even if this you thing. Compare yourself to say, I'm sure everyone's had this experience. If I could only get that, I'll be so happy. Oh. And you get that and you look back and go, oh, I'm not happy. What's the next thing?
That's
this
right.
This is the problem. You know, doesn't and if you stay in your survival state, doesn't matter how much you get, you'll never achieve what you really want, which is to be happy, which is to feel in control and be the best that you can be. Doesn't matter how much you accumulate, if you like.
The I'll be happy wind trap, man, it's a danger. And it always keeps happening. Yeah, it's fatal because it keeps elusiveness. I mean, it keeps happiness at bay. So
great
this
for marketers though, because all marketing is designed to make you feel bad about where you are and think that you'll feel good when you buy their product.
That's because
they understand how the brain works.
They understand
that putting you in a survival state is going to make you more likely to buy their product.
Yeah, that's a shame, isn't it? But I mean, it's the way it is. So, well, Liam, thank you so much. This has been great. I know that our listeners will get a ton out of this. So thank you for joining. I hope that you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. I really love the way that Liam helped us to break that down, you know, in what can be kind of a complicated topic. Here are my three insights for thriving. Number one, nature has a 98% success rate, while humans have a 2% success rate when we think of success in terms of happiness and flourishing. I don't know about you, but I believe we need to change that. And the way to change it is to change the way that we use our brains. We are literally wired for success if we can get out of our own way. Insight number two, fear is the enemy. Marketers and media are selling us fear, and we're buying it at record levels. The problem is that we have conditioned ourselves to think that everything is a lion, that everything is a threat to our survival. Because of that, we have put ourselves in a perpetual state of living in the survival brain. We literally do not have access to our sage brain or creative brain. This is the part of the brain where we can come up with our best and most creative solutions. It's where curiosity exists and compassion and empathy. It's where we connect with our purpose and what matters most to us. We need to spend more of our time there, not less. And finally, insight number three. Our brains were designed to feel fear when there was an actual immediate threat to our survival. Think about that for a minute. As you go about your day or your week, notice how many times you get stressed and the fear response is triggered. In those moments, pause and ask yourself, is my survival or safety truly being threatened? I hope that you had many more takeaways, and I'm sure that you did. And I hope that all of this will help you to thrive in your life, because we are designed to thrive and to flourish. It's why I studied what I did in my undergrad and my graduate programs. It's why I do the coaching that I do, and it's why I started this podcast. I truly hope that this podcast gave you some great insight and information that you can use. If it did, I hope that you'll share this episode with a loved one or a colleague who could benefit from hearing it. Enjoy your week and be sure to thrive no matter what.